In 1968, he organized the Jewish Defense League. He began protests against the Soviet Union, and as a result, spent 11 months in federal prison, at which time he did not forget his Jewish heritage and saw to it that kosher food was made available to the inmates. Smicha, ordination from the renowned Miri Yeshiva, along with a degree from the New York Law School and a master's degree in international law and relations from New York University. It is interesting that he is a person who practices what he preaches, for he has made his home in Kiryat Arba on the West Bank, a traditional new Jewish community. A member of Knesset, in which he founded his own political party. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Rabbi Meir Kahane.
Thank you. 22 years ago, in the town of Rosh Ha'ayin, a small Yemenite town near Petah Tikva, a child was born to one of the families. Shealtiel Akiva, he was called. Shealtiel, I have asked from God. His parents had asked for a son, and a son was born to them. 2 weeks ago, I took part in the funeral of Shealtiel Akiva. A soldier in the Israeli army was killed. He was not killed in Lebanon. And he was not killed in the territories, Judea and Samaria. Shealtiel Akiva was killed within the Jewish state, as he was hitching a ride 5 kilometers from his town. He was picked up by Arabs in a car, Israeli Arabs, and he was murdered. For 2,000 years, the Jewish people had a dream. For 2,000 years, the Jew, wherever he was, whether in Europe or in Arab countries, whether Poland or Morocco, the four corners of the earth, the Jew for 2,000 years had a dream, a vision, a hope. It was the dream of Shivat Zion, the return to Zion. And 3 times daily for 2,000 years, the Jew prayed, "Tehazena einenu b'shuvcha l'tzion." Your eyes behold thy return to Zion. That was our dream. To come out of an exile where Jews were beaten, stepped upon, insulted, murdered. To come back to our own country where we would be free. Where Jews could be free to walk the streets freely. Without fear. Our country. Our sovereignty. I want to tell you that the state of Israel is not that dream. Shealtiel Akiva is only one of a long list of Jews who in the last year have been murdered within the state of Israel by Arabs inside the country. For the most part, you never hear of these things. Not only is it that CBS or the New York Times or Time magazine finds no interest in the fact that a Jew is killed, but the Jewish news media and the Jewish leadership and the establishment does not move heaven and earth when a Jew is killed, as they moved heaven and earth when Arabs massacred Arabs in Lebanon, and the Jews took the blame for it. So you don't know any of the names of the Jews who have been murdered in the last year in the state of Israel. So you don't know the name Moshe Tamam. Moshe Tamam was a soldier, 19 years old, who also stood waiting for a ride at the crossroads of Beit Lid, Summit Beit Lid. And those of you who have been in Israel may know that the Beit Lid crossroads is not on the border. It's near Netanya, in the heart of Israel. Moshe Tamam was picked up by an Arab car. His body was found 4 days later. Not only had he been murdered, but they had gouged out his eyes and cut out his sexual organs. Does anyone here know the name Moshe Tamam? Do all the people that get up and say Kahan is a racist because he wants to move the Arabs out, do they know of Moshe Tamam? Were they at the funeral? Is there a greater tragedy than that of parents who have lost a son, a child? David Bukra. You don't know that name either. David Bukra was a soldier too. He disappeared in May of 1983, and he was found in September of 1983. He was found in pieces. The Arabs had hacked his body to pieces. Did that make headlines here? Did Balfour Brickner rail and condemn it? Did Alexander Schindler move the heavens and the earth? Did the American Jewish Congress call a day of mourning? You all know, most Jews know of the name Emil Grunzweig, the Jew who was killed, the member of the Peace Now movement who was killed at a rally of Peace Now. You couldn't help knowing of it. In Israel, every day and every night, the television, radio, and news kept Emil Grunzweig. There's a park in his honor. Every year there is a march. The week that Emil Grunzweig was killed, Esther Ohana was also killed. No one here knows the name Esther Ohana. Esther Ohana was a young girl of 20, due to be married in 2 months. She was from the village of Beit She'an in the Jordan Valley. She was riding in a car when Arabs threw rocks, they threw stones at the car. And she was hit in the head, and she died. Who knows of Esther Ohana? I was at the Shiva. I was at the Shiva. I was at the home. You know what it is to lose a girl, 20 years old, from rocks? The irony is that we who serve in the army in Israel, we receive orders how to react to attacks. And the orders tell us, if they throw rocks at you, break off contact, because rocks are not dangerous. Someone forgot to tell this particular rock it wasn't dangerous, and they buried her. And she's buried and forgotten. Danny Katz was a 15-year-old boy in Haifa. Haifa's not on the border. Haifa is the third largest city in Israel. Danny Katz lived in an upper middle class neighborhood, Denya, on the Carmel. Danny Katz was a 15-year-old boy who left his home one day and was never seen again alive. Arabs, Israeli Arabs, our Arabs, good Arabs, coexistence Arabs, Arabs from the Israeli village of Sakhnin, who worked in the supermarket, kidnapped him, raped him, and murdered him. Who knows about Danny? Who cares about Danny Katz? We only grow angry when an Israeli soldier who explodes with fury and anger and vengeance attacks an Arab bus in retaliation for two Jews who were murdered. Then the Knesset holds a special session to condemn the Jewish terrorists. Then the American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, and all the rest of the pygmies and dwarfs that control this community. Then they cry out, and then they scream, and then they protest about Jewish ethics and Jewish morals and morality. For 2,000 years we had a dream. This was not the dream. My son came home from the army with a flyer, a letter from the army, which is given to all soldiers. And the letter said, "Soldier, be careful when you're hitching a ride. Be careful." I read that and I said, "This is the end of Zionism. Our soldiers have to be careful. We have to be careful. We've turned Israel into Brownsville. We've gone back to Minsk. We've gone back to some ghetto. We have to be afraid." Jews ride buses in Israel, and on each bus there are stickers saying, "Be careful. Watch out for objects, a suspicious object. And if we see one, panic breaks out. The bus stops. The passengers run off. They call the police. They call the bomb squad." Arabs ride on Arab buses. No signs, no suspicious objects, no panic, nothing. In Kiryat Arba, Jews live surrounded by a barbed wire fence. The army, border police, each of the residents has to take turns guarding. In Hebron, the Arab town, the Arabs sleep the peace of the just. No one is afraid. There's no barbed wire. There's no police. There's nothing. Who was the conqueror? And who was the conquered? And who's the fool? This wasn't a dream. A woman comes to me in Kiryat Atta, a suburb of Haifa, and tells me, "I'm afraid to let my child play in the streets at night." I'm back in Brooklyn. That's not the dream. That's the end of the dream. It's a curse. It's a nightmare. God gave us a gift after 2,000 years, and He called it the State of Israel. He gave us a gift. We came back again. The gift of Jewish power and Jewish pride and Jewish strength. And we took it and we turned it into what we have turned it into. On June the 1st, there will be a great cheer from all the leftists and from the American Jewish Committee. Israel will pull out of Lebanon. And within 1 month, when the rockets begin to fall again on the Jewish towns in the Galilee, what will we say then? 650 Jewish soldiers died for nothing. Lebanon was a tragedy, but not because of what the Jewish liberals say. It was a tragedy because we went in there and didn't finish the job. That was the tragedy. We had it in our power to physically liquidate these PLO Nazis. Physically wipe them. Kill them. We stopped. Pressure, afraid, what would the world say? We stopped. And we pay for it today. The tragedy began in the first weeks of that war, when the Israeli army, under pressure of Peace Now, and the leftists, and the world, and CBS, and the New York Times, suddenly gave orders to its troops that when attacking a PLO position, which happens to be located in a civilian area, you are not allowed to use air cover, artillery cover, because if you shell or if you bomb the area, you might kill civilians. And so Israeli soldiers, foot soldiers, had to go into those areas without cover. Do you know how many tens of Jewish soldiers died from sniper fire? Because of that insane decision? Morality? All the Arabs of Lebanon are not worth the life of one Jewish soldier. In World War II, the Gentiles understood how to fight a war. When Allied bombers went over every night over German cities and bombed the cities, 1,000 bombers bombing Cologne and Bremen and Dresden and Berlin. What do you think that they were bombing there? Generals? They knew who they were bombing. They were bombing the German people, because it was the German people that was going to back Hitler and was going to conquer a world, and my God put out all the lights. It was a war against the German people who were backing the Nazis and who cheered Hitler. And in that war, there wasn't time for misplaced pity. Because as our rabbis tell us, he who has mercy on the cruel will someday be cruel unto the merciful. We had pity on the Arabs in Lebanon. 650 Jewish soldiers died for nothing because of this. The state of Israel came into being as God's hand. Nothing happens in this world except that God wills it. After 2,000 years of a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name, that's what the exile was, a desecration of God's name, because Jewish weakness is a desecration of God's name. The lesson of the Holocaust, the real one, is not only that 6 million Jews were murdered, but that they were murdered and the Germans laughed at them and mocked them and said, "Jews, where is your God? Let him help you now." That was a desecration of God's name. That was Chilul Hashem. Hebrew Chilul comes from the word Chalal, which means empty, a vacuum. We emptied God from the world by our being weak. God, at some point in history, says, "Enough, I'm going to sanctify my name." And to all those nations that mocked me and said, "Where is your God?" I'll show you. And he shows the nations through the Jewish people. If Jewish weakness is in the eyes of the Gentile the weakness of the God of Israel, then only Jewish strength and only Jewish power and only Jewish victory can prove to them that there is a God in Israel. And that's what the state of Israel was. An explosion of Jewish power, an explosion of Jewish strength, an explosion of Jewish pride, a six-day war which was the greatest miracle to happen to the Jewish people in 3,000 years. Far greater a miracle than Hanukkah was. Hanukkah was a struggle that lasted 25 years with losses and victories and losses and victories and finally the victory. But who wins wars in 6 days? 6 days! You know what? What an awesome victory that was. We saw God. The world saw God. The world trembled. They knew something miraculous had happened, and we took this miracle and we threw it away. It's time that we punctured these myths of the Israeli leaders being heroes. Know that Moshe Dayan, as Minister of Defense in 1967, was opposed to capturing the Golan Heights because there were Russians there. And he said, "My God, if we kill one Russian, who knows what will happen?" He was a secular man of little faith, of no faith. The army outran him and captured it. And they killed Russians, and the Russians did what? Nothing. When in 67, Arabs fled, Dayan sent paratroopers to the Jordan River to bring them back, lest the world think that there was another wave of refugees. People of little faith. I recall once speaking to Pat Boone, another winner, a fundamentalist Christian. He is a believer. He believes in God. He was in the Bible. I wish that Jews did. And he told me a story how right after the Six-Day War, he visited Israel. Of course, he was invited there, and he went up to the Golan Heights with the Minister of Defense at that time, with the Chief of Staff at that time, Chaim Bar-Lev. And they showed him the incredible defenses that the Syrians had, and how, and Israel had penetrated these defenses and captured in one day. And Boone said to me, he said, I turned to Bar-Lev and I said, "It's a miracle of God." And Bar-Lev said to him, "What kind of miracle? We had a good army." That's the tragedy. That's the tragedy. The Jew has eyes and sees nothing, understands nothing, who trembles at the thought of Ronald Reagan, and who is convinced that Ronald Reagan is more powerful than God. I raise mine eyes unto Washington, from Reagan shall come forth my salvation. That's the tragedy. And so we come like some beggar at the shtetl door of the poets, the counts, the baron, and hold our hands out and ask for more money, please. That's not the dream. That's not the vision. That's not faith in the God of Israel. And so he pays us back measure for measure. You have more faith in Reagan? You fear man more than you fear me? Take them and enjoy them. Do it your way and see what happens. We're at the crossroads today. We have it in our power to bring the redemption, to bring the Messiah today, if we have the faith and the belief and the strength and the courage not to be afraid. And if not, we will bring on ourselves such horrors as we have not yet seen. You know what's happening today in Israel? A Jewish youngster goes into the army for 3 years. He gives up 3 years of his life. Doesn't complain. He's a patriot. He's happy. He serves his country. After 3 years, he comes home. No job. No job. No job. It's not true. There are people working. The Arabs are working. In Tveria, you go to the hotels. Who's working in the hotels? The Arabs are working in the hotels. A town which has a 15% rate of unemployment. The soldier is free. They remember him once a year when they call up for miluim, for army duty. That's when he is recalled. Yes, he exists. But the Arab works because the greedy Jewish boss would rather hire two Arabs for the price of one Jew. You think that's a normal people? No. If you want to guarantee that young Jews will leave Israel, Just keep going on in this way. Why should he stay? Why should he stay? He gives 3 years of his life and every single year 45 days. And he's unemployed. Why should he stay? The Arab doesn't give 3 seconds of his life and works and doesn't pay taxes either. You go today to cities like Jaffa or Acre or Ramle or Lida, Lod. These are cities that are becoming Arab cities. Arabs go and Arabs are buying apartments. They are buying up the cities. Arabs come with dollars, cash, dollars, and offer Jews twice the value of the apartment. Where do they get this money from? Where is this money coming from? Those are PLO funds. Those are PLO funds that come across the Allenby Bridge freely from Jordan. And the military government knows about it. But there is a political policy, let's not make waves, because if they live well, then they won't riot. I am convinced that Jews are essentially insane. I have not the slightest doubt. We are suffering from a 2,000-year malady called Golus, exile, which makes us insane. They're buying up land. There was a whole scandal in Israel. They are buying up state land. They are buying land because they have dollars. That's PLO dollars. That's a PLO program. And we sit by and we do nothing. Because why should we? After all, don't Arabs have a right to buy up the country? After all, Israel is a democracy. You go to the shuk, the marketplace, in any major town. In any major town with a Lod or Beersheba. And Beersheba is a very, very good example. Beersheba has two marketplaces. One, the Bedouin. The other one, the Jewish one. But that's not true. It has two marketplaces, the Bedouin and the Jewish one, which is becoming Bedouin. And let me tell you what is happening there, because when you go there, you don't see it. But when I live there, and I travel there, and I speak there, and the people come and take me and say, look at this, look at that, I see it. An Arab will rent a stall from a Jew. Rent. And he'll then proceed to sell his produce at half the price. So you ask, how can he sell it at half the price? So the answer is, if you don't pay income tax, and you don't pay a value added tax, of course you can sell it at half the price. So you'll ask, but don't the police know that they don't pay taxes? Of course they know. But there's a policy. Let's not shepherd with them. The main thing is that they're sitting quietly. So the Jew tries to compete for 2 months, for 3 months, for 6 months, and then he gives up and he sells the stall to the Arab. That's what's happening. That's what you don't see when you go on an American Jewish Congress tour to Israel. Jews go to Israel and think they've seen Israel. You haven't seen Israel. You've seen a hotel or the wall or Masada or a kibbutz. You haven't seen Israel. You haven't seen the reality, the tragedy of what's happening there. I was in Beit Shemesh last summer, and the Jew came over to me, a Jew from Morocco, and a man in his 50s, and he said to me, listen, I have two daughters. They're both married to Arabs. Then he looked at me and he started to cry. He said, when I was in Morocco, did I dream in my blackest dream, my nightmare, that my daughter would ever marry an Arab? There it couldn't have never happened. I came here to the Holy Land. I wanted to go recently to the Arab village of Taiba, an Israeli Arab village. And people said, well, why do you want to go to Taiba? Well, one of the reasons was that in the village of Taiba, there were 20 Jewish women married to Arabs. Just in Taiba alone. Just Taiba. They have over 100 children, all of whom are Jewish children, according to halacha. Their mother's Jewish. But in reality, they consider themselves Arabs. And they hate the Jews, as do all the Israeli Arabs. They all hate the Jews, every single one. And if you don't believe it, you are more sublimely naive than even I believed. What Arab in Israel wants to live in a state which calls itself the Jewish state? How would you love living in a state under Jerry Falwell which calls itself the Christian state? How many Arabs enjoy living in a country which has a law of return which applies only to Jews? That really makes them excited about Israel. Last week was Independence Day in Israel. Can you imagine the thousands of Arabs rushing out of their villages to celebrate their defeat? Exciting moments. The Arab of Israel, you think he gets up and sings his national anthem happily? His national anthem is Hatikva. You think that he enjoys singing the words Nefesh Yehudi Homia, the soul of a Jew yearns? That really grabs him. He just breaks down totally with pride. Indeed, last year there was a bill in the Knesset to make it the it's the de facto national anthem, but it's not the official one. So one naive Knesset member, fool, got up and presented a bland bill to make it the official national anthem. In any normal country, it would have passed. Like that, right? But Israel is different. Tufik Tubi, an Arab Knesset member, Communist Party member, he got up, and in an emotional speech, it was just pathos, said, how can you expect me to sing this song? And he was right. He was absolutely right. So instead of the Knesset getting up and saying, you're absolutely right, so get out of here and find some country which you can sing the national anthem, they killed the bill. They killed the bill. Now, when I tell you that Jews are not normal, I know whereof I speak. We Jews are riddled with guilt. For 2,000 years we lived as a minority. And a person who lives for 200 years as a minority can never be normal. Because to live as a minority is to live with fears and complexes and worrying about what will he say and what will he think and what will he do. It's not normal to be a minority. It's not normal. So for 2,000 years, we lived with those complexes and fears and paranoia. And we also lived with guilt, because eventually the minority begins to believe all the lies that are told about them by the majority. Eventually the Jew says, all the nations say that we are bad. You mean to say that they're all wrong? Maybe they're right. And a person who begins to believe that begins to hate himself. And that's what we have today. A people that came out of the exile into Israel. But it is easier to bring the Jew out of the exile than to take the exile out of the Jew. And so we are riddled with guilt. Guilt! Every conceivable guilt. Human beings breathe oxygen. Jews breathe guilt. We have a compulsion to feel guilty. We cannot survive. We can only live happily when we lose. We're so used to it. I'm not the loser. I enjoy winning. I don't see a single positive element that came out of Auschwitz. Not one. Nothing positive came out of the Holocaust. It is better to live than to die. And let the Jew learn that and know that without any guilt feelings about it. Dear Lord, I'm sorry that I'm alive. What will the world say? Who cares what they will say? Infinitely better to have a Jewish state that the whole world hates than an Auschwitz that the whole world loves. Infinitely better. Who cares what they'll say? They'll say it anyhow. The heirs of Israel, because they hate the Jewish state, pose a terrible threat to the existence of Israel just by their being there. The Arabs of Israel have many babies. Jewish women don't have many babies. Abortions, yes. We are the world's leaders at that. Or we just don't have babies. In certain parts of Israel, there are two dogs per family. And one child, maybe. But the Arabs have babies. And not only do the Arabs have babies, but we subsidize their babies. Because for every child, we give them a check from Bituach Lumi National Insurance. One baby, one check. Two babies, two checks. 10 babies, a book of checks. And so if you're interested in seeing Israel, on the 20th of the month, if you're in Israel on that particular day, the 20th of any month, go to the main post office of any town and watch the line of Arabs winding around the block with their checks. Some have 12 checks. Some have 18 checks. Why not? Why not? We pay them for each baby. Each baby born is a citizen of Israel who votes. Each baby is a citizen of Israel who hates the state. The Arabs are moving towards becoming a majority. The Galilee today already has a majority of Arabs in it. The Galilee is our Northern Ireland in 5 years. It's our Northern Ireland. Today there are Jews who are afraid to ride at night to Arab villages in the Galilee. That's the dream of Zion. Why speak of the Galilee only? The heartland of Israel has an area called Wadi Ara. When you ride on the road from Khadera to Afula, in the heart, the famous Emek, the famous heart where the pioneers came in the 1880s and 1890s and drained the swamps. When you ride on that road today, you can count the Jewish towns on less than the fingers of one hand. But you have to take off your shoes to be able to count the Arab towns. It's an Arab enclave. That's where the Arab village of Umm al-Fahm is, the one that I went to visit, and the entire world, and especially Jews, cried out in anger. Why is he provoking the Arabs? Provoking the Arabs. I don't have to provoke the Arabs. Jews provoke Arabs. By their living, they provoke Arabs. The little triangle, the Mishulash, which is right behind such places as Ranana and Kfar Saba and Petah Tikva, right behind there, is a hardcore of over 80,000 Arabs. Israeli Arabs. They're all Israelis. They're all citizens. They all speak Hebrew better than you do. They're the ones who go out with the girls of this Moroccan Jew. In the morning, the Arab is named Musa. In the evening, when he meets the Jewish girl, he's Moshe. In the morning, he's Ibrahim. In the evening, he's Avi. Every prostitute in Israel is Jewish. And the overwhelming percentage of the pimps are Arabs. That's the dream of Zion. That's the dream of Zion. But if a member of Knesset gets up and proposes a bill to put a stop to this, he's called a Nazi. Nuremberg laws. If the grandparents of most of the Knesset members would get up from their graves and see their grandchildren, they'd go right back to the grave. The gentilized Hebrews, they're such goyim, the Hellenists, they don't know what being Jewish is. How many Arabs will there be in Israel in 10 years if we just continue at this present rate? Without a war, peace. God gives us a great miracle and all the Arabs will sign a peace treaty. And Arafat will do tshuva. Arafat will become a penitent and beat his breast. He will swim from Lebanon doing the breaststroke. And he will cry out to all the Palestinian Arabs saying, make love, not war. And every night the Arabs will make love. How many Arabs will there be in Israel in 10 years, in 15 years, in 20 years? Do they have a right to be a majority? That's a simple question which I ask every person that yells at me. I say, do they have a right? Say yes, yes or no. Do the Arabs have a right to sit quietly, democratically, peacefully, equally, have babies, and be a majority? Yes or no? States and a Western democratic one. And if you don't like that sentence, I haven't come here to make you like anything. I've come here to make you think. The Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel. The Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel is a schizophrenic document. And it's about time that we looked at it carefully and honestly, because if we don't, in 15 years there will be Jews and Arabs in a bloodbath inside the State of Israel. The Declaration declares, Anu machrizim bezot al hakamat medina yehudit be'eretz Yisrael. We hereby proclaim a Jewish state in the land of Israel. That's what it declares. A Jewish state. What does that mean? A Jewish state? What does that mean? It means at least a state with a majority of Jews. That's the minimal definition. If there's not a majority of Jews, it's not going to be a Jewish state. It'll be Brooklyn, maybe, but not a Jewish state. A lot of Jews is Brooklyn. A lot of Jews is not the Jewish state. A Jewish state is a majority, because only a majority gives you independence and sovereignty. And the right and the power to create your state. That's a Jewish state. So of course that's what Zionism is. A Jewish state. That's what Judaism calls for. A Jewish state. Then this schizophrenic document goes on and declares equal political rights for all its citizens regardless of faith or nationality. That's democracy. Equal political rights means democracy. So we now have a democratic Jewish state. Nice? Abba Ibn loves that term. Oh, Abba Ibn. Oh. In 12 languages, he loves that term. You cannot have a democratic Jewish state. That's an absurdity. Because a democratic state means that if the Arabs will be the majority, it will be a democratic state made up of a majority of Arabs and not a democratic Jewish state. You can have either a democratic state and whoever's the majority is the majority, or you have a Jewish state, which means a majority of Jews, or an Arab state. But you can't have a democratic Jewish state. So the question comes down again to its most basic one. Do the Arabs of Israel have a right to be a majority? And if they do, if they are, then they will send 61 Arabs to the Knesset and they will vote to abolish the law of return. And they'll vote to change the name of the state from Israel to Palestine. And you will be able to give money not to the UJA, but to the UAA, United Arab Appeal. Do they have that right? If you're a Democrat, of course they have that right. What kind of a question? What are you, a fascist like Kahana? But if you're a Jew, if you're a Zionist, if you know that we have only one state and they have 22 states, then you say, of course they don't have a right to become a majority in my state. And if there is a conflict, then Jewishness and Judaism in a Jewish state takes precedence over Western democracy. I'm not a committed lemming. Everything that God made in this world, He made for a certain reason. Every animal, every creature, every law of physics, every law, everything is for a reason. And God made a creature called the lemming. The lemming is an interesting creature. It's like a rat. But it's an amazing creature. Every so often, every number of years, for some incredible, inexplicable reason, whole herds of lemmings gather and they charge madly across the cliff and they jump over the cliff into the ocean and they drown themselves. Amazing creature. God wanted to teach the Jew a lesson. Lemming. Don't be a lemming. We are the two-footed lemmings of the world. We have the same intense needs out of guilt too. You see how much we love you, world, that we're ready to kill ourselves. Now please don't kill us. And abnormal people. We don't have much time. Because in 5 years, when the Arabs will be 25% of the country, and in 10 years, when they are 33% of the country, and in 20 years, when they are the majority of the country, we are going to face a bloodbath. And if you want to know what the Arabs will do to us, if ever they get the opportunity, then just see what they do to themselves in Lebanon. And know how much more it would be for us. And if you want to know what the Arabs will do to us, look what they did to us before there was a Kahana, before there was a Jewish state, what they did to us in the 1920s and 1930s. A pity. The average sovereign in Israel, not only doesn't he know anything about Judaism, he doesn't know anything about anything. There is a special course given today in every high school in Israel. It's a compulsory course on Kahana. It's an anti-racist course on Kahana. Every student has to learn this course. Part of the course also involves sending high school students to spend 3 to 4 days living with Arabs in Arab villages. And then Arabs will come and live with Jews. If the Federation would try to push through such a program here, they would burn the building down. But there is no special course in Israel on what the Arabs did to us in the 1920s and the 1930s. You know how many hundreds of Jews were massacred in cold blood? Do you know of the massacres beginning in 1920 in Jaffa, in Jerusalem, Hebron, Sfat? You know that between 1936 and 1938, 510 Jews were massacred in cold blood by Arabs, and Kahana was only 4 years old? And Begin wasn't even in the country. What did the Arabs want from us then? Why were they killing us then? What was bothering the Arabs in 1920 and 1930 If you ask the Peace Now people, they will tell you why it's obvious. The occupied lands of 1967. Of course. Why didn't I think of that? They killed, they murdered Jews, they raped Jewish women, they burned dunam after dunam of Jewish fields and orchards. That's what they would do to us again. Because the issue in Israel has nothing to do with compromise. Nothing to do with giving up Judea and Samaria or Gaza. That's not the problem. Because when they had all of these lands, they were killing Jews. The issue is the existence of Israel, period. That's the problem. The existence of a Jewish state. What bothers Arabs is Jews. The fact that we exist there, that bothers them. So don't fall into this terrible trap of the Jewish liberal and the Jewish left, who tries to paint us with guilt and who walks around with a mantle of ethics. They're not ethical people. They're murderers. Every Jew who has been murdered in the state of Israel because Jews said, well, we can't throw the Arabs out. Every one of those Jews that was murdered, the blood of that Jew is on the heads of every other Jew who said, we can't throw the Arabs out. We had pity on the cruel. We had mercy on the cruel. We were cruel unto innocent people. That's the tragedy. What has to be done? First of all, what has to be done is we have to throw the Arabs out of the country. Now, if there's one Jew sitting in this room who is so obtuse, who is so abysmally thick as to say, but that's what the Germans did to the Jews, I'm appalled at the equation. It's similar. Did the German Jews in Germany sit day and night saying, it's our country and the Germans took it from us, and when we become the majority, we're going to take it away from them and call it Israel? The Germans, you wanted nothing better than to be a good German. The Arab Israel doesn't want to be a Jew or an Israeli. He wants to be an Arab, living in a country that is an Arab country. So when one sees that, and when one knows that, and when one says, let's get rid of them before they get rid of us, that's similar to what happened in Germany. When the Talmud tells us, Habalaho gechash kemlaho go, if one comes to slay you, slay him first. I'm moderate. I say, one comes to slay you, throw him out first. Because I'm basically moderate. I'm not an extremist like the rabbis of the Talmud. But understand that the Balfour Bruckners and the Alexander Schindlers and the Theodore Menns and all of these ignoramuses, reform rabbis and conservative rabbis who babble about what is Jewish ethics. These are people who wouldn't know a Jewish ethic if they fell over one. Ignoramuses whose sole good fortune is that their congregation knows less than they do, babbling to us about what is Jewish. I'm ready to debate any of them, on Judaism, but they're too terrified to do that. I'll go anywhere, debate day and night, anywhere with them. Would I love to get them. But they won't debate me. And so people who are incapable of debate instead defame. And labels are the last refuge of non-thinkers. And so that's why I have such tremendous problems getting speaking dates today. And how similar, how history repeats itself again and again and again. When Jabotinsky came to this country in the 1930s, the Zionist organization, America, took out full-page ads in the Yiddish papers calling upon Jews to boycott him. And when Jabotinsky would speak in Poland, and the Jewish Bund, the Socialist Bund, would come out with headlines, the Jewish fascists. Incredible how history repeats itself. But the tragedy is that we don't learn from history. We make the same mistake again and again and again. Throw off the shackles of these pygmies that pass for Jewish leaders. The American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, the B'nai B'rith, the federations, these are the same organizations that in the 1940s stood by and watched the Holocaust take place and did nothing. The same ones. These are the ones who sat by for so many decades and watched the agony of Soviet Jewry take place and did nothing. These are the ones who destroyed our Jewish children with their melting pots and their interfaith. These are Jewish leaders. These are Jewish losers. Throw them out. Throw the rascals out. It's long overdue. And find Jewish leaders who are really Jewish, who believe in Judaism and in Jewishness, and who have both faith and the courage to act on that faith. Not for nothing does my support in Israel come from Sephardic Jews. Not for nothing. They are the last of the sane Jews. They're untouched by college professors. They're normal people. They lived under Arabs. They know what Arabs are. They don't learn about Arabs in some seminar. They know what Arabs are. They lived under them, and they never again want to live under them again. Never, never. Of course they understand the Arab mind. An American Jew sits and says, well, why can't we come to an understanding? Because an American thinks that you can come to an understanding with everybody. You're angry at Reagan? All Americans suffer from this sickness. Let's forgive and forget. We've forgotten that there is a thing known as good and as evil. And you always hate evil. And you never forgive evil. Ever. So we're angry at Reagan because that involved Jews. But we do that with the PLO. Well, what happens? True that they started five wars with us, the Arabs, but let's forgive and forget. Forgive and forget. They don't forgive. They don't forget. Let's sit down and over a cup of coffee have reach a compromise. Moshe Aaron once put it well. He spoke to an American Jewish group which said, well, why can't we reach an understanding, like compromise? And he said, listen, this is the Middle East, not the Middle West. So the Sephardic Jew knows that because he comes from the Middle East. He lived with them. He knows them. And he knows the great lesson that they understand one thing only, and that is strength. That's what they understand. Strength. I want the Arabs out. I wish them well. I don't wish them ill at all. I wish the Arabs long years of happiness, wealth, and success elsewhere. Elsewhere. I don't hate Arabs. I love Jews. I'm not going to see Jews killed because of a misplaced, misguided, insane, corrupted, perverted sense of ethics, which is not ethics, but precisely the opposite. I want an exchange of populations. Beginning in 1948, we took in 800,000 Jews who fled Arab countries. 800,000 Jews fled from Iraq to Morocco. They left behind every penny. That was phase one. We took in the Jews. Now we've come to phase two. We took in the Jews, now let's give them the Arabs. An exchange of populations. What's so terrible? What's so terrible about it? When in 1945, after World War II, the Poles and the Czechs expelled 12 million Germans from their countries. Anyone say anything? Not only did they do that, they threw out 12 million Germans who had lived there for centuries. You know why? If you know anything about World War II history and pre-World War II history, what those Germans who lived in Danzig, Sudetenland, what they did. They were fifth column inside the country. They brought on Hitler. So after World War II, the Poles and the Czechs, by the way, the Poles are not stupid. Stop telling Polish jokes. Start telling Jewish ones. The Poles and the Czechs threw them out. Nobody stopped and said, but how can we throw them out? And what will the world say? That's out. And it was ratified at Potsdam by Truman, by Atzi, and by Stalin. I want an exchange of population. We took in Jews, give them Arabs. And if you ask me, but how can we? Let me answer you by telling you a little story. 3 years ago, I served on army duty in the territories. In one of the cities, in Ramallah, the Arabs rioted. So they sent me to put down the riots. It didn't take 5 minutes. The Arabs heard that I was in town. It was a pleasure to watch the quiet. It was just a pleasurable town to be in. Because you don't know what the name Kahana means to the Arabs. They are convinced that I am, at the very least, some kind of monster. Insane. Dangerous. A murderer. And that's good. So let no one ever come to me and say, why don't you try and change your image a bit? God forbid, I've worked too long and too hard on this image. I know I'm not a monster and I know I'm not the murderer, but I don't ever want the Arabs to know that. Because when they hear Kahana, and with God's help, someday when they'll put on their radio one morning and hear the 7 a.m. news and hear that the new Minister of Defense is Kahana, there will be little need to throw them out. They'll leave on their own. I remember when Menachem Begin took over in 1977. When he took power, the Arabs sat in abject terror for 2 months. They were convinced that Begin would either kill them or expel them. The tragedy was that we didn't know it then, but he had already ceased to be the Menachem Begin that we once knew. That was the tragedy. But I'm Kahana, and I've always stayed Kahana. And so I'll offer the Arabs an option. Any Arab who's ready to leave immediately, quickly, without any... absolutely no problems, will receive compensation for his property. Not total compensation, because we have to take off for what they owed the Iraqi Jews and the Syrian Jews and the Egyptian Jews and the Moroccan Jews and the Algerian Jews and the Libyan Jews and the Jews of Tunis. We have an accounting to be made. But they'll get something. And those that don't, I promise I'll throw them out in trucks and they'll get nothing. They'll leave, and it'll be good for both of us. I wish them well. I wish them truly well. But not in my country. My little country. My only country. Let them live in any one of their 22 countries. Any one, any two, any 22 of them. I have only one country. And I'm not going to lose that to bullets or to babies. To no one. And I don't apologize for it. I'm not riddled with guilt and complexes and fears and paranoia. I don't debase myself by debating whether, well, is it really ours? Or maybe both of us own it. No, both of us don't. It's my country and not his. It's our country and not theirs. And I'm waiting for the first Syrian to get up and say, well, maybe we should, maybe it's theirs and ours too. Syrians may be evil people, but they're normal. I would like to see Jews good people and normal. In the last election, we received one seat. That in itself shook up Israel for 2 months. For 2 months, not a night went by on radio and television. It was not being believed. There was no more problem with the economy. There were no problems. It was only Kahana. They couldn't believe it. Because for years, they had convinced you and themselves, he has a couple of followers, crazy nuts, an American here and a Russian here, and they had 12 followers. And suddenly 26,000 people voted. And let me tell you something. Another 100,000 people would have voted, but they were afraid that I couldn't win, and they didn't want to waste the vote. How many Jews have come to me and told me, I didn't vote for you, because I didn't think that Kach could possibly win, and I didn't want to waste the vote. But the next election, you've got me and my family. You wait for the next election. There's going to be an earthquake in Israel after that election. The B'nai B'rit leaders are going to be jumping off buildings here. Because when I travel to a town, a development town, when I enter a poor neighborhood, it's like begging again. It's like begging again. It's not just a meeting, a revival meeting. Sing and dance and carry me on their shoulders. And you can see people's faces light up with hope, because Israel today, for the first time, has lost hope. For the first time, Israel is unsure of itself. People are afraid today. Soldiers are afraid today. And I come and I give them hope. I know how many times soldiers have come to me and border police have come to me and said, we want to hit, we want to shoot back, but we have orders. They tie our hands. And when I get up and I say, when I'm Minister of Defense, I'll untie your hands. Do whatever you have to do. Just do it. And I see their faces. Of course that's hope. Of course that's hope. The last poll in Israel showed us with 6 seats. But a columnist wrote, and not a friendly columnist, because there are no friendly columnists. He wrote, fools, for every person who admitted that he's going to vote Kach, there's another one who's going to vote Kach and won't admit it. He's not going to get six seats. He's going to get 10 seats. And he's wrong, too. We'll get more than that. Because for the first time, someone in the Knesset is saying what people think. With God's help, we're going to make this country, Israel, a Jewish state. And I don't only speak about the Arab problem. When I speak to the Sephardic Jews, the Jews from Arab countries, I also speak about what happened to them. When I hear the leftists in Israel speak about democracy and ethics and morality and loving Jews, I stand in abject terror. Unbelievable. They speak of morality and ethics and loving of Jews and democracy. I remember these people, the leftists, who in the 1940s would kidnap Irgun soldiers and Sternists and hand them over to the British. That's love of Jews. That's ethics. I remember the Irgun ship, Altalena, in 1948. An Irgun ship which was fired upon by the Palmach. And 19 Jews were murdered. 19 Jews were murdered because Begin was on the ship and they wanted to kill Begin. I remember that. And I remember who was the commander of the unit that fired on the ship. His name was Yitzhak Rabin. And I remember what the Prime Minister said the following day in the Knesset, and it's in the record. He said, "Ashrei HaTotach HaKadosh, blessed be the holy cannon that killed 19 Jews." Don't talk to me of ethics and morality, you hypocrites. And I remember what they did. Those who speak of, they speak of democracy. When the Jews from Arab countries came in 1948 and were placed in transit camps, if you wanted a job, they asked you, "Are you a member of the Hestadrut?" And if you were not a member, you didn't get a job. And if you were, you got the job. And they asked, where does your child study? In what school? If it was a religious school, you didn't get a job. And if it was a Hestadrut school, you got the job. And when I say that to Sparta crowds, they remember. They remember. They were the victims of that. They talk of love of Jews, of ethics, what they did to the Yemenite Jews. 10,000 children of Yemen, 10,000 boys came to Israel in 1948 without their parents, under the auspices of Youth Aliyah. Every Yemenite youngster that came from Yemen was a religious Jew. Every single youngster. They came with their Shabbat, they came with their kosher food, they came with what they called their simanim, their signs, their earlocks, that they called their signs, because that was a sign of a Jew in Yemen. And they were brought to Israel, the Holy Land, which they had prayed for 2,000 years of poverty and persecution, and they finally came home, and they were placed in such holy institutions as kibbutzim of Hashomer HaTzair. They ripped from them their Jewishness, they ripped from them their Sabbath, they ripped from them their simanim. Prisons of Israel today are filled with Sephardic Jews. Sephardic Jews who never knew what crime was when they lived in Morocco or in Iraq or in Yemen. Don't talk to me of ethics and morality. We're going to bring back Jews, a Jewish state, a Jewish state, a state of Judaism, where Jewish youngsters will have Jewish pride, so that I'll never again hear some sabbah get up and say, "I'm not a Jew, I'm an Israeli." What an obnoxious, what an obscenity that is to have a Jewish youngster in Israel get up and say, "I'm not a Jew, I'm an Israeli." There are no Israelis, there are only Jews who live in Eretz Israel. And there are no boundaries between Jews. There are no Russian Jews, there are only Jews who happen to live in Russia. There's one Jewish people, and they're all Jews, and they're all bound one onto the other. And I want Jewish youngsters in every school in Israel, in every public school, to learn Judaism. Because without Judaism, then what are we? We are empty-headed vessels. Then why be Jewish? Then why not move to L.A. and make money and get a green card, which is Hebrew for green card? I want every Jewish youngster to get up every single morning in Israel and say, "Ashreinu ma tov chilkeinu. Happy are we. How good is our lot. How beautiful it is to be a Jew." When I was sitting in Ramle prison, I was in Ramle prison for 8.5 months, thanks to the democratic state. I was, it wasn't an ordinary arrest. It was an administrative arrest. And administrative arrest, let me tell you what an initiated arrest is. I'll tell you what an initiated arrest is. You're home at night, and there's a knock on the door. And you say, "Who's there?" And they say, "The police." So since I know them all, so I come in. And they show you a paper and say, you're going away for 6 months to prison. I say, I'm away for 6 months. When was the trial? And they tell you, in an administrative arrest, there is no trial. So you say, all right, at least what is the charge? We can't tell you. That's what I like about a democratic state. Next time they ask me what kind of a state would you like to see, I'll say the same kind that you have. A democratic one. In prison, on my cell door, I put up a sign which read, Kama tov liot yudi tov. How good it is to be a good Jew. And all these Jewish prisoners, murderers, bank robbers, rapists, they would pass by and they'd all go, Kana kama tov liot yudi tov. And it was a pleasure. I said, a sheer class every day. I had the only sheer in the world whose members were criminals. It was a pleasure to speak. They were Jewish and they loved it and they loved it. And there was a spark of a Jew in each and every one of them. Of course we can change it. We can bring the Messiah. He's waiting right outside the door, banging, knocking, kicking, saying, let me in, I want to give you salvation. Let him in. Open the door with Jewish faith and Jewish strength and Jewish courage. With God's help and with your help, we are going to power. I'm not satisfied with 10 seats. I'm going for the whole ballgame. And with God's help, in the years to come, we will be the government of Israel. And I want each and everyone here to have a part in that. Jewish history is being made now. We are making history. And you can become part of that. Join with me. There is a need for a movement here, not just in Israel. First of all, to demand from your rabbis that I be allowed to speak in the synagogue. I tell you that if the Egyptian ambassador would contact any temple, any synagogue in Brooklyn and ask to speak, they'd fall all over themselves. Demand that I be allowed to speak. In a debate, I'll debate the rabbi. I'll debate there on any... Let him name the subject or to anything. Just let me get at him. Spread the ideas that I have. Tell people he's not crazy. Come and hear him speak. At least listen. At least listen. Raise funds for us. Give us the support that's needed. History is being made. We'll either turn to the right or turn to the left, and depending upon where we turn, that history will be made either with majesty, with glory, or, God forbid, with terrible tragedy. I never again want to go to a funeral of a Jew who was killed and we could have avoided it. I never again want to sit shiva with a Jewish family and know it need not have happened. I never again want to hear, we can't do this, it's not moral. I say it again, the life of one of our soldiers was worth every Arab in Lebanon. And God will pay us for all the Jewish lives that we caused to be lost by our insanity. Ronald Reagan does not control the destiny of the Jewish people. We did not come back after 2,000 years to fall into the hands of Ronald Reagan. God is bringing us the redemption. He just looks to us, just ask me for it, and I'll give it to you. Turn to me, and I'll turn to you, he says. Come back to me, and I come back to you.
The hour is late, and we have to thank Shellbank Junior High School, and they're on a strict time schedule. So we will take a certain amount of limited questions from the audience.
I'm sorry to start the questions off with something that's a bit of a risk from what you were speaking about, but due to the lack of time, I'm afraid it may not get in if I wait my turn. And that is, how would you suggest, Rabbi Kahane, we handle this question of almost 3 million Soviet Jews who are languishing in the Soviet Union? Every method that we have applied, it seems, in the Jewish community and our legislative body has been absolutely ineffectual.
Right.
If it was in your hands, how would you handle it?
Well, first of all, it's an excellent question, and it's a burning question. How can we save the Soviet Jews? And I want you to know that the Soviet Jews are in a position now of immense physical danger. Now, what would I do if I had the power? First of all, I can tell you that we have to awaken American Jewry, which is a slumbering giant, to go on a non-stop kind of a camp. Look at what's happening today with the issue of Africa. With, you know, South Africa, the campuses have erupted with this. Not just one campus in one day. It's an ongoing process. And that's why they are going to win. They are going to win. You have to have Jews every day at the Soviet mission, sitting down, getting arrested. Get arrested. Why can 2,000 people get arrested at the South African embassy? Why are they not afraid? What is it to be afraid of being arrested in America? It's a joke here. It's a joke. We have to have hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands. Every block traffic caused panic there. Now, the problem is that the American Jewish establishment is not going to do this. And one of the reasons is that the American Jewish leaders take their cue on foreign policy issues from the State of Israel. When the Israeli embassy says yes, they do. When it says don't, then they don't. And when it's silent, then they're also silent. The State of Israel at this moment is not about to do anything to call for attacks upon the Russians, because the State of Israel at this moment is trying as much as possible to pacify the Russians so that they won't give aid and arms to the Syrians. Now that's a tragedy. If I had power, I would send every ambassador in every Western country and call on the Jewish leaders and say, listen, we want demonstrations every single day. We want arrests. We want Jews out in the streets. We want rabbis arrested. We want Federation leaders arrested. We want you, Theodore Mann, head of the AJC, to get arrested for Jews, just as you did for blacks in South Africa. Committees on Aliyah. And we know, we get the reports from the Soviet Union. And it is terrible. And the Israeli government has been asked by our committee over and over and over again to do something, and they do nothing, and they will do nothing. So that's what has to be. That's what I would do. In the meantime, I'm not the government yet. So what you have to do is to somehow arouse Jewish students with the same fervor that so many Jewish students have shown for non-Jewish issues. It is imperative that the Soviet mission be under a state of siege every single day. You have to create tension. The Soviets now want a detente, and that's good, because they're falling way behind in science, in technology, computers, and they're deathly afraid of this Reagan-Star War thing. So they want a detente which will give them this. Well, let's not let them have it. Let's say if you want it, you have to pay for it. If they don't have to pay for it, then they certainly won't pay for it. If they'll have to pay for it, that is more important to them than Jews are. And that's why we were able to get out 250,000 Jews between 1968 and 1975. That's why, not because Russians are winning better then, but because we have leverage then. You want this, you can't have it. So you have to push the Russians and the Americans. Now, unless Jews are ready to sacrifice, you're not going to do anything. Without sacrifice, you never achieve anything. Stop this nonsense. You can't achieve anything great without sacrifice. And what is it a sacrifice here in America? You get arrested and you get a little summons to appear before a judge. Big deal. I mean, Israel is a problem. You know, 40 hours in prison. But here, it's a joke here. It's a laughable joke here. Go to Brooklyn College and pull out all the Jews from their kosher burger place, wherever they have over there, and drag them down and tell them don't go to a Kalbach concert until you're first arrested. And tell Kalbach to say that you can't buy a ticket without showing that you were arrested first. There are so many things that I would do if I had power. If I had power. Oh, God, if I had power.
I would like to say, I've listened to your definition of what you envision as a real Jewish state, not so much democratic as Jewish. And if you are successful and every Arab is taken out of Israel, I don't know whether or not this would be any safer being surrounded by 22 hostile Arab countries. But I have a feeling that with every Jew living there who would want to go, you would have such diversified Jews on so many different religious levels that there would be so much infighting as you have now between secular Jews, religious Jews, Yemenite Jews, you name the whole gamut of every kind of Jews of different persuasions. How will we have peace in that country if everybody feels that theirs is the real Jewish state? And that's the way it has to be. How long do you think we will last if we're not unified against all the hostile Arabs?
I don't understand your question. You have a problem, which is a problem, which has nothing to do with me. It's a problem. You raise a problem, which, whether there's Kana or not Kana, there's the same problem. So obviously Jews are not together, and that's a terrible, terrible thing, and it has to be changed. How? I don't know. I don't, because no one has had the answer for 4,000 years. So, hopefully, the answer lies in the school system of Israel, an educational system of Israel, which will give youngsters the concept of Jewish pride and Jewish unity and brotherhood. That's the only answer. I'm not going to be a demagogue here and tell you that I have an answer to a problem which Moses didn't have.
I'm really sorry, but we have to put an end to the questions. I would like, on behalf of Bay Park Kojo, to thank our chairman, Mr. Alan Davis, our executive director, Rabbi Moshe Portnoy, and of course, Rabbi Kahana. Thank you very much.